This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing my conversation with Kreith Abdul-Ahad. The new book is A Stranger in Your Own City, Travels in the Middle East Long War. It is the years 2011, 2012, and 2013, on the eve of much, much more violence than even in that first decade following the American conquest and occupation of Baghdad and Iraq. Kreith, a very good evening again to you, and we begin the conversation with a high school friend of yours whose name, nom de guerre, is Hassan. You find him sheltering in his family's home in the northern part of Baghdad behind locked doors. This is a Baghdad that is unrecognizable from 15 years before. It's divided into concrete blocks, and also people are keeping neighborhoods of Shia, Sunni, and everything in between. Hassan, what does he tell you about his life and his medical degree and how he is living? Good evening to you again.
Good evening, John. I mean, Hassan was a high school friend, and we used to walk from my high school into his house when we ran away from school to avoid one of these spontaneous demonstrations. But after the first phase of the Civil War, trying to retrace my footsteps, my route back into Hassan's house, I realized that the neighborhoods have been divided. There are two walls now separating the high school from Hassan's house, and that to go into that, one needs to leave one enclave, drive up and down a highway, enter a second enclave to find another neighborhood. And of course, the whole geography of Baghdad had changed by that time. I managed to trace him. I managed to find him. And of course, he tells this story. I mean, we as journalists, we witness the horror, selectively. We go, we see a story, we come back. But for the people of Baghdad, and Hassan was like them, they had to live through it day by day. So he describes the time when a car bomb went right in front of him, when he was stopped at the checkpoint and they asked for ID card and he could have been killed. So all these stories were, the common experience of Baghdadis at the time.
The state of corruption, which is how you present this transformation from the first civil war that ended 2007 with the defeat of the Sunnis, and the second civil war where it's all against all. We will explicate. The state of corruption is that the regime in Baghdad, Maliki's regime, is dominated by men and players who are eager for money and are endorsing the sectarian conflict, making money on the sectarian conflict. How do they see their role? The Americans are about to leave Baghdad formally in 2011. In that time of between the end of the first civil war and the exit of the Americans, how is Maliki's government regarded in Baghdad?
Well, John, I mean, Maliki had an amazing opportunity to end the civil war because by 2008, the Sunnis, as you say, were defeated. Many of their former insurgents commanders had turned into allies with the Americans. They fought with the Americans against the jihadis. They were expecting to be reincorporated into the society, given jobs, given salary, the same thing that was happening with the Shia militia commanders. Instead, Maliki pursues a very sectarian policies, going after those, not only those commanders, the former commanders, but also going after former Sunni politicians, the vice president, others. And that kind of entrenched this sense of, this Sunni defeat, the Sunni disillusionment with the government of Nur al-Maliki.
Next.
And of course,
please continue.
So Nouri al-Maliki also, in the second elections, he came second. The winner of the elections was a coalition of secular, trans-sectarian coalition of Sunni Shia Kurds and Arabs. But the Americans and the Iranians both wanted Nouri al-Maliki. The Iranians, because he was their client. The Americans, they thought and it's Biden, by the way, who was leading the Iraq portfolio, they thought they can deal with a strong man, a Shia strong man like Nouri al-Maliki. So they allowed Nouri al-Maliki, who came second, to manipulate the votes, to get a ruling from the Supreme Court. And many believe that kind of whatever Iraqi democracy we had died that day when Nouri al-Maliki was allowed to form a government again. That government, as you said, was built on corruption, was building a patronage client network. The military was turned into money-making machines, military units which had soldiers on the paper in the thousands, in reality had nothing more than hundreds, and the rest, the difference, were salaries siphoned by the military commander. That was the state of the Iraqi army and the security forces at the eve of ISIS emergence and the Second Civil War.
Yes, the Second Civil War begins with next-door Syria collapsing in its own civil war, bringing in from across the Ummah, I have a list, Turks, Chechens, Tajiks, Pakistanis, and all of them gathering in Syria, but they'll quickly spill over into Iraq. And the question is, who is against whom? It gets lost. The Free Syrian Army starts as an idea to oppose Assad, and it becomes an aspect, a recruiter for al-Nusra. What is al-Nusra's place? That's al-Qaeda's Syrian presentation. What is al-Qaeda's place in Iraq at this time? We've not spoken of the jihadis much other than to reference Zarqawi, but how does al-Nusra present itself?
Well, John, by 2008-09, basically al-Qaeda in Iraq was defeated. They fled the major cities, the major Sunni cities. They ended kind of somewhere in the desert region between Syria and Iraq. And that was the situation that al-Qaeda found itself at the eve of the Syrian civil war. The Syrian civil war created the opportunity, as you say, everyone against everyone, the chaos of the Free Syrian Army. Everyone is funding them. Europeans, Gulf Arab countries are arming them. The Iranians are there. The Russians come later. So in that chaos of the Syrian civil war, the jihadis find a niche for themselves. They equip themselves. They arm themselves by fighting other battalions, capturing weapons, many Western-supplied weapons. And unlike the other kind of militias, the jihadis are very disciplined. So they build their own internal or recreate their internal networks, reconnect with their people across the border in Iraq. And it's then in this kind of, in the really charged sectarian atmosphere in the Middle East that a Sunni attempt to mimic or recreate the Arab Spring in Iraq basically deteriorate or collapses into an ISIS takeover of Sunni towns and cities.
And finally, the Friday of Anger, December 2012. This is on the eve of what we know to be the rise of the Islamic State. That's Sunni rising, correct? All, and they're united in their opposition to Maliki and nothing else?
It is another one of these moments in Iraqi history that you would stop and think, this is another crucial moment. Again, the Sunnis, or the Sunni leaders, I have to say, the Sunni leaders, tribal elders, bunch of mavericks, who decide to go into another fasting deal, again with the jihadis, thinking we will use the jihadis to defeat Maliki, and then we will take over again. But of course, I mean, they tried this once and they failed, and they tried it again. And of course they will fail. So what started as genuine Sunni demonstrations soon was infiltrated by the jihadis, by other elements. And within the chaos, I mean, look, it's the same story everywhere. It's in Afghanistan, it's in Iraq, it's in Yemen. The jihadis are they benefit from the chaos created by civil wars, by foreign invasion, by Western intervention. And in that chaos, the jihadists as a small disciplined force can find a space for themselves. They did the same thing in Iraq after 2012. They captured a couple of towns, but their biggest ultimate victory was capturing Mosul, Iraq's second biggest city. And that happened, again, because Maliki or the Iraqi army forces, security forces there were perceived as sectarian, as oppressive, you know, oppressing the people. And ISIS portrayed itself at the beginning as, quote unquote, liberators for the people of Mosul. The corruption within the Iraqi security forces led to their defeat, collapse. They withdrew from the city, leaving tons of equipment, Humvees and, you know, you name it, in the hands of ISIS, which, again, led to unspeakable kind of atrocities.
I learned from Haith that it's 500 miles or kilometers from Baghdad to Mosul. I can't remember, Haith.
Kilometers.
Kilometers, yes, 500 kilometers. And along that is a road of horror. And we're going to one city in particular that illustrates the Sunni disorder, and that's Ramadi. This is a stranger in your own city, travels in the Middle East long war. Raif Abdul Ahad is the author. I'm John Mack.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for filet of fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.